Hey everyone, welcome to this week's edition of our Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. I'm Chris Bowden, joined as always by Scott King of WGNRadio.com, the writer for the Chelsea Dagger blog, Chelsea Blogger. At least we heard Chelsea Dagger a little bit, not only at the Open, but a couple times at the United Center this weekend. And also joined today, pleased to be joined today by Jimmy Greenfield, the digital sports producer at ChicagoTribune.com. You can follow him on Twitter at JCGreenX. Jimmy, good to have you in here and for us to mingle here for the first time.
Great to be here.
Yes, and so we're coming off, as we record Monday afternoon, Blackhawks enjoying a few days off before they're back in action, not only in game action, but in practice action. They're taking a couple days off before resuming on Wednesday. So we are your Blackhawks fix until then. And Scott, I know you watched the game on Saturday, was there on Sunday as well, as the Blackhawks split their two games against one of the elite teams in the NHL. What were some of your impressions from what you saw Saturday and then the follow-up performance on Sunday? Joe Quenneville put it as if, you know, they played five pretty good periods of hockey over the course of the weekend. The one that they didn't really jumped up and bit on Saturday afternoon in Boston.
Yeah, I agree. We were talking a little before the show. I think Saturday, it was a solid game. They were playing well Saturday, and it all kind of fell on Kane taking that double minor. Mm-hmm. Which you know, was a two-goal swing, and they wound up losing 7-4. But he completely redeemed himself on Sunday. It was almost a complete reversal, a mirror image. The hockey gods gave him some good fortune there. And yeah, what a shot that was! Inside of the post, right in the corner, right in. That was great. And just overall, Sunday, I think they looked really good. You don't hear Chelsea Dagger as much as you used to. You've been hearing a little bit last few games, especially with the way that first line's playing. I thought they seemed like a good team, a good team win, and some power play goals, two power play goals, something that's been putrid all year, their power play. And a lot of that's Jonathan Toews. He gets a primary and secondary assist on those. You have John Hayden in front of the net. Yeah, I think I counted Saturday and Sunday's game, Hayden coming back, four screens that led to goals. Plus, he had a goal and an assist Saturday. So someone I said the Hawks, you know, play with more purpose when he's there. But I think certainly the time in Rockford did him well and is going to continue to do him well in his development moving forward. But I think he probably should stay with the Hawks now.
Yeah, and Jimmy, I think there's this balance, Jimmy, when we look at what happened over the weekend. You know, they show signs of encouragement with some of the young players, especially with how they performed Saturday in Boston. You kind of have to balance that, though, with the manpower Boston was without. Brad Marchand added to the mix on Sunday when, you know, Bergeron's already out, back as Charlie McAvoy, who I was really interested in watching. I haven't watched McAvoy all season long for an entire game. I was really interested in seeing him. It's probably better for the Blackhawks that he didn't, but you also have to find that balance. You know, the Haydens, the Highmores, some of the kids continue to look good. Eric Gustafson had himself a big offensive weekend.
How good has he been since that contract extension, Chris? So his offense is really getting into another gear now.
Yeah, five-point weekend, but you kind of have to balance that, too, with, you know, Boston's a good team as they were facing the Blackhawks. They're even better with some of the guys that they didn't have.
Yeah, and the back-to-backs can sometimes be a little tiring, especially, you know, these earlier starts. And, you know, it's just nice to see that they would play well for these games that, for them, they don't matter. You know, they're not going to do anything in the standings. You don't hear about tanking like you do in the other sports with the Blackhawks, a team that could benefit from losing a few games now to get a few more, you know, perhaps a better draft pick. You know, when Gustafson signed that contract, it was, you know, people really, it's amazing how quickly people turn on Stan Bowman. You know, what are you doing signing him for? But he's the kind of player you need to have around for the turnaround to begin again for the Hawks, for next year to be a good year. And they trust him, and you can see why.
Yeah, the thing about Gustafson is, and then following up signing Jan Rutta at the number he did, I think the people basically have a problem with the number that he was.
It is interesting,
at.
You know, almost twice as much the Rutta getting as Gustafson. That's my only, you know, maybe question or a talking point. I completely understand signing Gustafson, the way his offense has really come on, and look, you know, he's not one of the youngest young guys, but it does take guys a season or two a lot of times in the NHL, or maybe even a little longer, to find their game. And I think Jimmy had a great point, and that these games do matter. And not only do they matter for the young guys and their development, DeBrincat's been great all season. Good to see Highmore get a goal. These are guys you are going to need to count on in the future as you're rebuilding, as the team is trying to get back to where they were. But it, guys like Seabrook and Taves. Taves, 9 points in his last 6 games since Taves, Kane, and Saad have been together. It's great to see these guys for their own confidence that they're going to need next season. The core guys, these games are important for them now.
The critics will say that with the Ruda contract, and Ruda's a 27-year-old, if we're talking future here, he's a 27-year-old, and Gustafsson, I believe, just turned 26 or will be 26 if he isn't already. So they're not the real young guys,
right.
And they have yet to prove that they can put a consistent, you know, a full NHL season under their belts. Ruda come into the league for the first time since playing overseas, and he's had some offensive upside. But in terms of putting a consistent full NHL season together, they have yet to prove that. And when you look at salary cap structure, I think a lot of people still view Gustafsson, Ruda, probably Connor Murphy, with where Brent Seabrook has played this year. You're looking at those four, and perhaps even a Jordan Oesterle, if you get down to it, if you really want to go out and look for to trade for or sign a free agent, elite free agent defenseman, which they may still have some money for. But what you have almost is a, in terms of body of work, a logjam of guys who are at best second pair, if not third pair. And I think that's where people's concern comes in with salary cap structure. And just when you think you may be getting out of the woods on this, committing that kind of money to guys who won't be playing principal roles.
Right. They're not going to be able to make a mistake, whoever they would go after, if they're going to go after the best available elite defensemen, and these guys do not grow on trees.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know. You know, you can't sign the guy. Like, I mean, Connor Murphy is certainly not someone who you...
He's gotten better, though. I think he's gotten better.
But that's the best you're going to say about Connor Murphy. He needed to be a solid top four guy, and he's it's
floated in and out of that.
Yeah. No, for sure. But he has improved. I think he can be. You know, he can be decent. Maybe even have a good year on the second pairing next year. Like you said, those top two defensemen, everyone in the league could use probably a top two defenseman. So yeah, it's going to be hard, but I think that when you look at the numbers, you look at Ruda getting signed here with Gustafsson, their extensions, I think they will still have, when a couple more moves are made, maybe about $10 million, I believe, Chris, to go out and maybe try to get a top two defenseman, if not make a trade happen where you retain some salary. Because that is what they need. I like their forward group a lot. I like the way these young players have developed that we talked about. And, you know, if maybe you do put Kane with Taves and Saad earlier, if things aren't going well next season, if not right away.
And the elite guy that everyone's going to be going after is Washington's John Carlson. He's probably going to be asking in excess of $6 million. So right now, with the group that you have, you've already committed $20 million to a salary cap that's expected to go up to, I believe, around 80, maybe 82 right now. And there are loopholes with what they can and can't do with that Marian Hossa contract. But Carlson's going to be the main guy that everyone's after. I don't see the Blackhawks wanting to invest in a 32-year-old Mike Green, and I'm just talking in terms of some of these offensive-minded defensemen. So the market's going to be tough. Is he really going to be a fit? I think, you know, with this structure, it's been written since these two signings that Stan Bowman is happy with what, or he's pretty much going to be moving forward next year into what you see now is what you're going to get next year. And if that's the case, I think he's putting a whole lot of trust in Joel developing this defensive core, since he was an NHL defenseman. More importantly, Ulf Samuelsson trying to do the same with getting these guys. We saw in Saturday's game, we loved what Gustafsson could do offensively, but in that third period, he was involved in a couple of those goals, especially the even strength goals, where he was out on the ice and it didn't look really good, especially that Pasternak goal, not protecting that net as well as he should. So that was kind of an exhibit in what the concern is here, whether these guys can raise their games defensively. Gustafsson even admits the thing he has to work on is his decision-making process, when to attack, when to play it safe, when to stay back. And as a 26-year-old, how much can your game grow from there? That's going to be the question moving forward.
Well, it doesn't hurt that he has Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook to learn from either. And mm-hmm. those are very capable coaches, obviously, Ulf and Joel that you mentioned. So, yeah, these guys need to grow, and I think they will. I think that's what Stan Bowman's sane with these moves. And I understand why people are panicking. You want to see them get the best guys they can possibly get, but it takes time. There's going to be some growing pains, as we've seen this season.
Yeah. So prior to yesterday's game, we see what the Boston Bruins have done with their roster. It's been an amazing turnaround season for them because they are right there in the top 3 points-wise as we speak, with, 3.5 weeks to go in the regular season. And they still have core guys like Bergeron and Marchand and Zdeno Chara and Tuukka Rask, one or two other guys. As a matter of fact, David Krejci was there during their cup run, and then 2 years later when they faced the Blackhawks. So those are their core guys who have been the constants in their lineup, much like the Blackhawks have their own set of core guys, even though there's been some subtraction lately. And Joel Quenneville was asked prior to Sunday's game whether the Blackhawks can use Boston as a template in terms of revamping the roster, because when you get down to it, the Boston Bruins have led the league through the weekend with 46 rookie goals. They have 7 players who have scored their first NHL goal, so you can notice the involvement that or the importance that Boston's young players have had in their improvement. The Blackhawks have had 5 players this season who have scored their first NHL goals. That number not quite as high as the 46 rookie total that the Bruins lead the league with. But Joel Quenneville was asked prior to Sunday's game whether the Blackhawks can use what Boston has done as a template for this Blackhawks rebuild.
Yeah, I think that there's call it a bounce factor, or one of those years where you just miss, or you still think you're in those stretches of those years, you're going to have good runs, at the end of the day, your core is still in place. You had a couple of young pieces to your team, and you had a couple of younger guys that all of a sudden in the course of a year come up as well. So it's it can happen quickly. You've seen a lot of teams turn it around from where they were out of an off year, and Colorado last year to this year, and up and down a number of teams who were not even close to the playoffs, and all of a sudden this year they're in the mix and they're playoff teams. And but young guys, and the way the league is changing so much so quickly that from year to year it's anybody's game.
So there's Joel Quenneville before Sunday's game, and I don't think there can be any better example. Now the question is whether Stan Bowman and especially the scouting staff, this is going to be an important draft coming up, as well as the development of what they've done in the last 2 or 3 drafts, because there's some big names, especially on the defensive side there, either playing junior hockey or college hockey right now. It's going to be an important draft. And the question is, that's perfectly the template. Now it's a matter of getting those right players in the slots.
It's immensely important. You need to get cheap, young production, and if you can do that, you can get away with mistakes. And right now the Hawks are in a situation where their best players are getting a lot of money. Tane and Caves are getting a quarter of the payroll or whatever it is. Remember when they were in 2010, I think that I'm not sure their second contract had kicked in. Brandon Saad was an enormous part of the second and third cup runs. He was cheap and great. Guys like Andrew Shaw came in. They had players who came in and were important pieces, and you're just not getting that. You're getting more of the role players who are not, they're not showing anything that they're special. You saw that in the earlier years of the Hawks, great teams. And they got to find some surprises. Hopefully it can come in the next draft, but it's difficult. Out of the first round, players don't tend to come up right away.
This draft, Chris, they have 2 firsts, 2 thirds, a 4th, and a 5th. Mm-hmm. Is that right? So mm-hmm. That's plenty of picks to get
right.
Somebody
and
who can surprise
these,
you, if not
and,
the first round guy.
You have to be real lucky for guys to come in and play right away. It's become more common, but not necessarily. Who knows if Henry Jokiharju is going to be ready? Everyone I speak to who has seen him play consistently thinks it's going to take another year before he's ready. They're going to bring him to training camp,
but he should be pretty good when he is ready.
He should
they have
be
that kind of expectation.
But that may not come next year if they do end up signing Dylan Sakura once his. And by the way, thanks to our one listener who tweeted back to me and clarified that if Northeastern does make the Frozen Four, that's the same weekend as the final weekend of the NHL regular season. So he would not play with the Blackhawks at all, and he would have to make his decision on whether he wants to sign. And that first year at least wouldn't be burned up. And the Blackhawks, I think, did themselves some goodwill as well by signing his brother last week. Yeah. Joe Quenneville was at the game Friday at Northeastern before coaching Saturday in Boston. So this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. That's another young player who could, you know, perhaps come up and fill a void. You already have DeBrinket and Schmaltz and Hinostroza, perhaps Highmore, along with this defensive core, David Kampf as well. So this turnover is in the process of happening, but you're not going to hit a home run on every one. And we started them paying a little bit more defense draft-wise this past year, and now it's just going to be a matter of time of how quickly these guys are ready for the NHL, and then once they're up, how quickly they can play well and make an impact. That's going to be the big question here.
Yeah, I think the fans just have to keep in mind you're not looking for Stanley Cups right now. You're looking for development almost across the board, probably with half the team. These younger guys are guys that haven't been in the league or on the team for very long. You just want to see things trending the right way.
Yeah, and if you take Boston's example, I don't think they've had a recent long playoff run. Even last year when this turnover started happened, they made the playoffs, and that was largely thanks to the late coaching change when they got rid of Claude Julien and brought in Butch Cassidy, as Troy Murray likes to call his former teammate, and he's done a terrific job there. They made the playoffs last year and then were beaten in the first round, like the Blackhawks were, by a team that went pretty deep in the Ottawa Senators. And where are the Ottawa Senators this year? Hey, I know you caught up with former Blackhawk, current Boston Bruin, Tommy Wingles, prior to yesterday's game. I caught him real quickly when I was on the air. He came into our booth to sign a couple of things left over from his quick exit on trade deadline day. And it was good to see him. But this is another guy that perhaps would be able, the Blackhawks might be able to bring back if they are so interested in, if he is so interested at a lower rate when free agency hits. He shouldn't be your primary objective, but he's one of those guys out there who certainly didn't hurt himself in his time here before being traded.
And, you know, he might make a decent run with the Bruins at the Cup this year. I don't know if they'll get past the Lightning, but no, it was great to talk to him. He's a great guy. Always a great quote. It was funny. I you never know. You just ask the PR people. You might, because he talked the day before. They didn't want to give him to anybody. And right. They told him I wanted to talk to him, and he came out. And John Dietz kind of stole some of my thunder. No, just kidding, John. But no, Wingles talked to us, and John wanted to ask him about, if it's possible for him to come back here. Would he want to come back here? I think we all know he would, but he wouldn't say that in the middle of playing with a team you're going to probably make a run with. You don't want to get into your future, but I think he'd be great back here. I think the way I asked Patrick Kane after the game about him, Kane said he liked him a lot. He's a guy that was expected to play wing probably overall, and he wound up playing center and doing a good job of it on the fourth line. It's a very good shutdown line. He does have some skill. He crashes the net. He can score some goals, very hard on pucks. And they are missing, they got Hayden back now, but they were missing guys that played with the net, guys that were tough. And they even threw, how many games was it, Chris? They threw him up there on the first line with Taves quite a while. I think at least a week, maybe if not 2 weeks, he's playing up there. So a guy like an Andrew Shaw, you can kind of throw anywhere and really use.
And obviously he shouldn't be a top priority, but if it happens to work,
it happens.
That's all well and good. By the way, I just looked up Boston's recent playoff history, and you see where they are right now. You may not like hearing this, but after the 2013 Cup final against the Blackhawks, 2014, they made it to the second round and lost. They did not qualify in 15 or 16. I was trying to refresh my memory. I thought they had at least made it one of those 2 years, but they were out of the playoffs those 2 years. Last year, they lose in the first round. So whether Blackhawks fans want to hear this or not, you hope it doesn't go to those levels in terms of trying to speed up the rebuild. But sometimes there's a little bit of tooth pulling here, trips to the dentist here, where you may not necessarily like it. Now, the question is how management would feel about that kind of length of rebuild. I think they'd probably want it sped up a little bit.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, but the fans, they I don't know if they've forgotten the Cups, but they expect more.
And that's a result of the Cups, too.
But yeah, to be fair, that is the way the Blackhawks kind of designed things with how they structured the team and also their marketing is those guys were good enough where you would expect it every year. At least a good run, if not a cup. And that's the gold standard that they set. So it's only fair. Fans have to be realistic and not pile on everyone and every coach all the time, but that is kind of what as expected.
It's very confusing for my 13-year-old because his whole life they've been very good, and he doesn't understand why they're not going to the playoffs this year.
What's wrong with him, Dad? What's wrong
with
him?
He's right, in a way.
And then when I'm looking back at Pittsburgh, this has been a topic that we've discussed, and now that I'm smart enough to at least look it up at a computer while we're doing this podcast, Pittsburgh, after winning the Cup in 09, lost second round in 10, lost first round in 11, in 12, and then came back in 13, made it all the way to the conference finals before losing to Boston. They would have faced the Blackhawks if not. And then following 13, there was a second-round loss and a first-round loss before they come back. And as they're restocking this roster the right way, as Sidney Crosby stops having concussions, they find all the right pieces to kind of work themselves around it. It's really a complicated puzzle, but the thing that everyone repeats most from, observers in management, Stan Bowman said it himself, Joel Quenneville said it in so many words, and we know all the fans are saying, as encouraging as some of these young guys are, what's going to be most important are bounce-back seasons from the guys you're relying upon, because Brandon Saad can't buy a goal, and he's looked a lot better lately in terms of his attacking the net. He had another breakaway on Sunday. Couldn't put that thing in. Jonathan Toews showing signs, at least lately, of getting on the score sheet. Duncan Keith, I thought, had himself a real good weekend. But then compare that to what happened a weekend ago in some of those games out in California. You need more of that Duncan Keith this past weekend from the 1-2 weekends ago. And, whether it's necessarily finding the fountain of youth or working on their games, which, is the obvious answer, they're going to have to come back a whole lot stronger next year.
They do. And I forget who tweeted this, but I saw a stat that Keith has no goals and 2 primary assists over his last 55 games or something.
Here it is. 1 goal for Duncan Keith in his last 80 regular season games, 84 if you count the playoffs last year against Nashville.
Yes. Yeah.
Brent Seabrook.
Not much.
Brent Seabrook. 3 goals in his last 58 games. He had a goal in the opener, I think. 3 goals in his last 58 games, 8 goals in his last 158 games. So finding these guys and putting them in the right spots in your lineup, and again, that's when you start getting into, especially on the blue line, some of these defensive arguments. Okay, who's your top pair then? Who are you going to put with Duncan Keith, who we saw over the weekend can still be very good? He's just, maybe not be Norris Trophy level. And at 35 years old, he said earlier this year he's feeling as good as he ever has. But there have been too many mistakes that are going to have to be cut down on from what we've seen this year.
Well, we know he'll work very hard in the offseason. Not only does he work with Paul Goodman, the Hawks' strength coach, but he has his own. He has his own strength and conditioning coach when he goes home, too. So, he's a guy who will, at least try really hard to bounce back. We've talked a lot about Brandon Saad on the show, and I think everyone's money is on him to be the guy who definitely has a bounce-back season next year. But it would be great if he can kind of start that now.
Right.
Because when you look at this first line that's been together for the last 6 games, Toews, 3 goals, 6 assists, Kane, 2 goals, 5 assists, Saad, 2 assists. So that's kind of an example of his body of work of why he wasn't maybe able to get Toews going early in the season. Obviously the first couple games they were great together and Saad was great. And like you said, Chris, it's just that finish that, he is crashing the net a little bit. He's just got to find a way to put it in. And you don't know why that's happening. He's doing a lot of the right things. A lot of the metrics and possession numbers are in his favor, but he's just not finishing. It's been like that all season.
Yeah, and I think our discussion here is primarily answered our fan question from Facebook. Brian Alcock on Facebook asked, what are the plans for the much-needed defensive upgrades? And we've kind of been discussing this. I think there's still a window to go out there and get, what is hopefully a top 4 type defenseman. If you don't get the very top guy out there, have someone else. Another guy that we've kind of forgotten about who probably has to be worked into the mix as well in the conversation is Gustav Forsling, who along with Ruta for the first 2 months of the season was real good. And then, as I think Ruta and himself started, Forsling himself started feeling the grind of an NHL season and, other teams having tape on them, things started not going so well. And for the second straight year, Jeremy Colleton, who I talked to last week when Rockford practiced here, admitted as much. It was a confidence thing for him again. So you see the tools that Forsling has and how good he can be. Now it's more of a mental thing, getting squared away upstairs. But I think, here's a guy who has a potential to eventually be a top four defenseman if he can work through some of these issues. Only 21 years old.
He's kind of like Gustafson too, right, where he's got that offensive upside, skates very well. It's just a lot of decision making.
Right, right. So we will see how that works out. Another great moment of Sunday's game at the United Center was prior to the game when Kendall Coyle of Palos Heights and Alex Rigsby, the backup goalie from Downers Grove for the U.S. Women's Olympic hockey team, the gold medal winners, came out. They were recognized. Real cool ceremony with them and all their getup, their complete uniform except for socks. I don't think they packed the Olympic socks because Kendall was wearing the Blackhawk stockings.
So I say, it was a little early in her career for the one more shift treatment, wasn't
That's
it?
Right.
It's pretty early.
That's right. But it was really a cool moment to see see those ladies recognized for all they earned. And Alex came out in her complete goaltending gear as well, and they took a spin around the ice, had a real warm reception. I had a chance to talk to Kendall before that ceremony. And, man, what an impressive young lady that she is. And I know she works a lot with the Blackhawks community relations, community liaison, working at various clinics when she has the opportunity throughout the course of the year. And one of the things I asked her about was how the gold medal winning team from South Korea just a few weeks ago can raise the ceiling even more for U.S. Women's Olympic hockey.
It can go tremendously high. And you talked about our tour. We saw the U.S. Women's Soccer team. We saw Serena and Venus Williams. And they're people that we look up to see where their game has grown. And they're continuously growing their game. So they're platforms that we look at and see where we can get. And I think just with this win, the women's game is going to grow significantly. And ultimately, the respect for the sport is increasing. And I think that's what I look at and respect the most.
So she mentioned some of her idols. And now she's an idol of a lot of young girls, we assume. And from everything I understand, I think I saw a report where the number of girls registered in the United States to play hockey at youth levels is at an all-time high. And I can imagine that's going to grow even further. Later on in that conversation, we talked about, all right, what's next from here? Well, she says she doesn't have to go back to USA Hockey until August or September or so. She has the hope that one day there would be a women's professional hockey league, that there would be enough funding and interest for something for it like that to happen. I'm not sure how close that day is for all that the ladies accomplished, but for what they did accomplish, I thanked her because there was a Hawks game that night and they played long enough for me to get home. And finally watched the end of that game. Yeah. Thank you for entertaining me, Kendall. Yes. That's what this
You're
is
not
all
entertained,
about.
Said that's Kendall Coyne to Chris Bowden.
But to me, that was the highlight of those entire 2 weeks.
Oh, absolutely. That game was so exciting. I forget what time it was exactly. Was it 1 o'clock or
you
2
were early
in
your work shift, right?
I raced home and I was just trying to make sure I didn't scream and wake up my family when I was down there.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. It was one of the most exciting sporting events I've ever seen. And to get back to what you're saying about, you know, a professional league, I think it would do well in Chicago. I think if they had a pro team and you know, it's an exciting game. You know, the quality is great. I'm sure the if you could get a few of the cities that are traditional rivals involved and make mm-hmm. it, you know you don't want to have like Duluth versus, you know, Wichita, coming in.
That may be what it needs to be.
To start, yeah.
Hotbeds for youth hockey and all where the girls are playing most. You know, as much as we talk about Minnesota being the state of hockey, and we already automatically think of that as just boys or men only, I'm sure there's a ton of girls playing out there. Same in Colorado. Same here in Chicago. You have to find that one group of 6 to 8 cities where there is that high level of interest and participation with young girls playing the game, where I think something like that could happen. How soon it could happen, I'm not sure, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility as long as it's structured correctly.
Yeah, and you know this from your sons and playing hockey, Jimmy, that I think what the Blackhawks did in Chicago, where you can't buy ice time anywhere these days, the girls are doing nationally, which is just awesome. So yeah, maybe they will have that league someday, and they should. It'd be fun to watch. I think, like you said, it'd be great in Chicago. And the other thing I want to say is I think these two girls are handling their success and all the cameras and fans and everything tremendously. I think Kendall Coyne, I've talked to her before, but such a nice, down-to-earth girl who's really really handling this well.
That's Southwest Siders for you,
yeah, right?
Friend.
Yeah, a little Tinley, a little Palos Heights. Yeah, I know. Wife's from Orleans. Totally. Kendall told a really funny story. Both her and Alex were talking about how, they want to have their gold medal out. They want to take pictures with fans. They want to inspire kids to follow their dreams. But Kendall Coyne was at Costco.
I know which Costco she's talking about. Yeah.
Yes, as do my in-laws. And the day before the game, she's at Costco. And some woman just came up to her and goes, "Do you have your gold medal?" And she's like, "No, I just have my wallet. I'm at Costco."
That's right. All of a sudden, you step outside and you become an instant photo op for those who recognize you.
They're embracing it.
And that gold medal, she brought it. She was in on before Thursday's game. I didn't see her when I interviewed her on Sunday. I didn't see her. She didn't have the gold medal out. That thing's almost as big as her head. I mean, thing is,
I got a picture. It was big.
Huge.
It was big.
Yeah. And I'll play that entire interview that I had with her on our post game show following Thursday's game against the Winnipeg Jets. We have a longer post game show, so it's real fun to speak with her. And I kind of joked around with her fiance. They're getting married in July. Fellow Sandberg product, Michael Schofield, who was protecting Peyton Manning in Super Bowl. That was 50? Was
it? Yeah, 50.
50
at Levi Stadium.
Yeah. So he was one of Peyton's bodyguards, so to speak, in Super Bowl 50. Denver let him go. He played for the Chargers in that weird stadium setup this past year. But now he's a free agent as NFL free agency opens this week. And I was joking with her and him. Hey, maybe Ryan Pace can give you a call.
Why not?
Depth offensive tackle. He goes, "Hey, I played some guard too." So some depth on the offensive line. And Kendall turned to me and goes, "Oh, that would be so perfect."
So you've got an assistant GM Chicago credit now for the Bears?
That's right.
I don't know.
I don't know how much Ryan Pace would listen to me or not. But, hey, here's a guy who's played in some big games, has established himself. I'm not sure how high he is on the blue chip chart of the free agents out there. As we tape here, they just re-signed Bradley Sowell today, one of their backups from a year ago. So that might chop into that possibility of Mike Schofield playing here, but I think it would be a pretty good investment.
It might, and he just found a new agent who also might do Blackhawks pre and post.
That's right. That's right. So now we head into this week, and boy, one of the hottest teams by the time many people may hear this, really the marquee game of the week will have been played between Winnipeg and Washington. Winnipeg had two games prior to facing the Blackhawks on Thursday night. They had Washington on Monday and Nashville on Tuesday. There's a couple of stiff tests for them on the road, but it was Patrick Laine at 40 goals in 68 games going up against Alex Ovechkin, 40 goals in 68 games. And Laine, as we look ahead to this next Blackhawks game, has just been ridiculous lately. The goal pace he is on. He's 19 years old. He hasn't even turned 20, and he's already at like 80 career goals.
Did you have a slow start to the season, or was that Austin Matthews?
I think Laine was a little bit slow out of the gate, or there have been some ebbs and flows in his game. But and Austin Matthews lately has been injured, but Laine has been, and this is another team we talk about having to pay the price for a couple of years in order to make this roster youthful and talented enough, and you look at where the Winnipeg Jets are now, and remains to be seen how they can handle life in the playoffs. But they're playing as well as anybody. Maybe not quite as well as Nashville is right now with their double digit winning streak.
They finally lost, right?
Yeah, they finally lost. But Winnipeg is another one of these templates, examples you can use where it takes a little while for these guys to get used to the NHL level, but when you're talking about the Laine's, who it started right away for him, but Ehlers, a couple of other guys on this Winnipeg team, it shows what can happen, the importance of youth and talent, and trying to stay as patient as you can with developing those type of players.
So Chris is trying to tell everybody, have some patience. Just chill.
Well, that's not going to work. That's not going to work.
It never works.
When you look through social media, and even some media members, too.
True.
They want it all now.
Yeah. I like covering playoff games. I wish I was doing that. But I understand that things, after so much success, you have to develop and try to rebuild your team, especially with the salary cap in the NHL.
All right. So any final thoughts from either of you as we put a wrap?
The Super Bowl connotation with Kendall Coyne and her fiance and her big celebration. I did a blog about it. She had a great quote about it, so check that out. I talked to both girls yesterday, and you get some background on both of them in the blog, too.
All right. And, Jimmy, are you as down on the Blackhawks as all the fans seem to be?
I'm very worried that they're not going to be able to turn the corner back.
Quickly.
Yeah. I mean, but
eventually.
Quickly with this core. I mean, because there's too many of the players they have that were part of the old, you know, the 2009 to 2017 are going to be around. They're locked in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm very curious to see what they're going to do to try to turn things around, even for the next 2 or 3 years. You know, Kane and Taves, they're going to be who they are, but I'm just very reluctant to have a lot of hope just yet. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned.
And obviously the big question going forward is there doesn't seem to be any change. When we spoke with Joel before Sunday's game about Corey Crawford's outlook, he's working out behind the scenes. He's still not on the ice. And I've made the argument if he has that opportunity to get him on the ice before the season, and that window seems to be shrinking by the day and by the podcast, as we do it weekly here, him being unable to get on the ice in game action, taking that into the offseason, that might be a huge question mark that Stan Bowman is going to have to address if he is not comfortable moving forward with either Forsberg or Berube as a potential starter if this thing carries on a uncomfortable amount of time into the summer and perhaps into next training camp.
Yeah, that's a big question mark if he doesn't get in for the whole goaltending situation next year. What Crawford has, if he still has it in terms of skill, which I expect him to, but things with hockey injuries and specifically this injury is we don't know. We know it's upper body. We know it's been reported that it's head. We don't know exactly what it is and why he hasn't been able to get on the ice since.
So the only good thing about that is that it all the people who thought that Corey Crawford wasn't a huge part of those teams and said you could just put in any goalie have been finally proven
wrong. I think
the
hater club has shrunk a little bit.
Yeah.
It has, but wait till he comes back and he's playing very well. They'll find that. I mean, like you said, some of the people on Twitter are absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, all the little mistakes when he was playing that he was able to help hide with his spectacular play, now they're really blown up and they've turned into bigger issues.
Yeah, and in terms of the guys that they have right now, it seems like you get better play out of Forsberg and Berube here at home. They seem like different goaltenders here at home when they're on the road. I shouldn't limit it to goaltenders because it's the entire play around them. When they've been on the road, it's been a mad scramble, almost to the point where the play has been sloppy enough where you need Corey Crawford in order to keep you in the game. And unfortunately, these two guys haven't shown that on the road. At home lately, it seemed like a different story where they look a whole lot more palatable and impressive. And okay, maybe we can do something with this guy moving forward. But it also has a whole lot to do with the way the team is playing in front of him, and especially on the road. It's been difficult to watch at times.
Yeah, you saw earlier in the season where they just would not play well in front of Forsberg. He couldn't buy a good game from the guys in front of him. And I thought he looked really well yesterday. I thought there were some scrambles where he stayed in good position.
Yep.
I thought he tracked the puck after some rebounds, and I even saw him catch a couple loose pucks up in the air. I thought he looked really good, and it'll be interesting to see how he plays next year in a backup role again, if he can just go right back to what he was and come up with some big games.
But Jimmy, I think you agree that either of these guys, at least right now, still haven't shown enough where if Corey Crawford isn't ready, you can necessarily hang your hat on him. And that runs into a messy decision that Stan Bowman may have to make in the offseason.
Right. They're not, you don't look at them and think they for sure can be a starter for an 82-game season and play 60, 65 games in the season. Yep. You would not feel comfortable with that.
Just flashes. All right, boys. Thanks. Let's put a wrap on this. Well, maybe by the time I get out, I'll see if Dave Ennett has fixed his flat tire in the parking lot.
Poor Dave.
That's what I was encountered moving in. It was all good-natured. I didn't know cars don't have spare tires anymore. They're they're selling cars without spare tires, and there's what is it, pump a tire?
I didn't know they sell
can of something.
I didn't know they had a
that wasn't
spare
working
tire in a can
well
now.
For Dave.
Is it because we all have phones now? You can just call and get someone to come right away.
Yeah, well, but getting into our parking lot here. Well, never mind. We won't go.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah, that might require some criminal activity in order to get a tow truck or something.
Some behind the scenes stuff here. Dave Bennett had tire trouble too.
Yes, and thank goodness Northwestern basketball season is over. Football here is it, because he would have been rushing out to a practice or something like that. Instead, he was leisurely making.
I heard some of those
out.
Basketball pumps have been disappearing from Northwestern.
He did have some kind of portable pump in his car that seemed to be working better than the aerosol can. So I'm anxious to see if Dave has rescued himself from the parking lot, or someone has.
If not, we can help him now, at least.
I think so. We can just push the car up to his home in the northern suburbs. Follow along on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/BlackhawkCrazy for everything. Blackhawks Crazy for everything Hawks, including Scott's Chelsea blogger blog. Follow me and Scott on Twitter, as well as Jimmy. I'm at Bowden Tweets. Scott is at Scott King Media, and Jimmy is at JC Green X. Jimmy, great to have you in today. Let's do this a little bit more often, and we can maybe push the clock back a little bit later to not intrude on sleep time.
Sounds good.
From the regular gig.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Anything you got planned on the blog this week?
Probably some Seabrook tidbits going to his charity event. I actually have never been able to make it at Lucky Strike.
Okay, yeah, we're taping Monday afternoon, so he's doing his usual bowling event for charity. I'm heading over on Monday night to the high school state championship semifinals. Nutrier Green was knocked out a couple of weeks ago, so there is going to be a new king of the mountain. There's Glenbrook North, Glenbrook South, who are involved in the semis. The others are Stevenson and Loyola. So come Saturday, the 24th, the championship game that we'll be broadcasting on NBC Sports Chicago, myself and Jamal Mayers, is going to be a little new look to it, a new champion, because you know every year it seems like you can just pencil in Nutrier Green. And they got upset big time. I think they got blown out 8-3, and that after having to survive a triple overtime game to advance that game that they lost. It's a different world out there this year.
It was. I've gone to the game a few years with my kids,
yeah.
And it's great. You get there, you get phenomenal seats, and it's a lot of fun. That the atmosphere is great.
Yeah.
So if anybody is out there thinking about going, you should. You know, $5 bucks, free parking, and it's a great time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So I'm looking to see what some of these semifinal teams bring to the table as I do my prep work for the championship game on the 24th. Jimmy, Scott, thanks a lot. Thanks as well to Ben for spinning the dials here and getting us out and going. Joe Romano, I'm sure, will have his hands on this podcast before it's produced when all is said and done. Thank you for listening and watching or listening as well. We hope you continue to, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. That's this week's edition of our Blackhawks Crazy podcast. We'll talk to you again next week.